Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Monday to you, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. My name is Tommy Kester, along with Paul Savage, filling in for Jacob Albracht as we make our way to another work week. It was a wild weekend in the world of sports, and we are going to break it all down for you over the next 2 hours right here on KFH. Don't forget, the IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240, where, by the way, IHOP is excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal between now and the end of the month, so you can call and connect with us anytime there. You can also watch our video stream and leave your comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Also, we are live streaming on 12 News Connected. Like I mentioned, a lot to get to on the program today. It was nearly a disaster of a sports weekend around this area, at least when you're talking about both professional and college athletics. KU loses on the road at West Virginia. Kansas State loses on the road at BYU. The Royals get swept at home, making their playoff hunt a whole lot more difficult. And without a fourth quarter, fourth down stop on defense by the Chiefs in primetime, they nearly lost that game too in primetime on Sunday Night Football against the Atlanta Falcons. We will talk about all of that as we make our way through. But first off, Paul Savage, good morning to you, my friend.
How are you doing, my friend? Boy, there's a lot of sports this weekend. How much fun did you have? Because I had a ball, particularly, you know, with the Kansas City Chiefs game last night. Boy, that thing went back and forth. I was not convinced the Chiefs were going to win that game.
No, I wasn't. And to answer your question, I had very little fun this weekend sports. I mean, just because the outcomes were so poor,
right?
At least with the teams that we follow. And, you know, I was sitting there like in the fourth quarter as the Chiefs were kind of sputtering offensively and, you know, having a hard time getting it together. I thought, man, if Kansas City loses this game, if they find a way to fall to Kirk Cousins and the Falcons in primetime, it might be one of the worst sports weekends that we've ever encountered in this part of the country.
I know. Then we could take it even a step further. My Baylor Bears lost. You know, my favorite WNBA team, the Fever, lost with Caitlin Clark. They lost. I mean, we can kind of go on with this on and on and on. My second favorite NFL team, the Cowboys, they lost. And by the way, what a disgrace. I guess we'll probably get to that later in the show. Tommy, that was a disgrace. That was a disgrace in terms of how you play defense in the NFL. But we'll get to that later. But I'll tell you what, other than the Chiefs winning, for the most part, it's been a tough weekend on everybody.
Yeah, we're going to try to figure out what's going on and dissect all of it over the next couple of hours on the program. And by the way, programming note, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, will be joining us in our very next segment. We're going to break down everything that happened in Provo on Saturday night in primetime, I guess after primetime.
Got to.
Big 12 after dark with the Wildcats taking on BYU. Definitely not the outcome that a lot of folks anticipated out of that game. So we'll talk to Wyatt Thompson coming up in our very next segment. And like I mentioned, we'll try to figure out again what's going on with the Jayhawks, who now set at 1-3, and we'll spend some time on the Kansas City Royals after one of the most abysmal homestands that we've seen in quite some time from Kansas City. But we're going to kick things off with that primetime Sunday Night Football game, the Chiefs on the road in Atlanta taking on the Falcons. Really, it was defense, Paul. That was the name of the game for the Chiefs. That's really what led them to victory, as Kansas City gets a 5-point win, 22-17. They do cover the spread, but it wasn't very pretty offensively for the most part. And it really, like I mentioned at the top of the show, took a fourth down stop as the Falcons were threatening after the 2-minute warning to score and take the lead for the Chiefs to ultimately pull that game out.
Well, that's exactly true. I mean, and there were a lot of aspects to this game, particularly when you're talking about the defense. But, you know, you got to give credit to the Kansas City Chiefs. Man, that fourth down, the last play on offense for the Falcons, a fourth and what, maybe a yard and a half, maybe about a yard. It might have been that close. But I can tell you this, to make the play they did and get off the field, that was like inspiration. That's what legends are made of. Those are the kind of plays that you talk about for a long, long time. I took a picture of the formation. I had to pause it after the play was run. I rewound my television set and went back and looked at that formation that the that the Falcons were set up in. And I wanted to see, because, you know, it goes so fast, boom, boom, and then the ball snapped. You can't really examine and break down how does the Kansas City Chiefs line up to that formation. Here's why they stopped it, Tommy. I don't know if this interests you or not. It always interests me how things are done on a football field. It's always interesting to me. Kansas City Chiefs lined up 11 players in the box. 11 players were in the box. Yeah. 11. Now, think about that. Now, there were also 9 gaps because with the formation with 2 extra tight ends to one side for the Falcons, there are a lot of gaps to cover. But there were basically 9 guys on the line of scrimmage for the Kansas City Chiefs and 2 linebackers. That was it. That was basically it. Other than that. But here's the beauty, and why I bring this up is because we've got to give a lot of credit to the defensive staff for the Kansas City Chiefs to line up like that. Here you are. Basically, the game's on the line. Really, the game is on the line. You know, you get a first down, and you got a few more shots at the end zone, and you may end up losing this game. I give the defensive staff a lot of credit because they knew it was going to happen. They got their guys lined up. They filled every gap. You know, whenever you have so many guys on the line of scrimmage, because everybody was in the box, nearly everybody was in the box other than a receiver who was about 2 to 3 yards off. I don't know if you count him in the box. I kind of count him in the box based upon the nature of the down and distance. So I'm going to call I'm going to stretch things a little and say he was in the box. And Kansas City put everybody in a stance, other than the 2 outside contained guys, in a stance, in a gap, every gap covered, 2 linebackers at 3 yards. Not 5 yards, not 6 yards, 3 yards. And I break this down because every once in a while, you've got to take your hats off to a defensive staff who not only did they make the play, they made the play because the defensive coaches lined them up and gave them the ability to make the play. I don't know if that's even worth bringing up. But
yeah,
it is to me.
I mean, it makes sense. Honestly, Paul, in real time, watching that final play, that defensive stop for Kansas City, my first thought, and of course I'm not a football coach, but my first thought was, you've got 4th and a yard or 4th and inches or whatever it was, right. And you're trying to kick out to the outside, like run the ball up the gut if you're the Falcons. But of course, if they've got all the gaps filled, Kansas City's defense, then that's going to be easier said than done. Now, like in retrospect, knowing that and going back, because I watched that too, like you did, I'm surprised that Kirk Cousins didn't check out of that and try to do something different. You know, if you had a receiver that was just a couple of yards off the line of scrimmage, you know, try to get it to him. If Kansas City's defense is getting everything stacked up in the box, then try to go over the top of that. Because that could have had, you know, quite a bit of success for the Falcons and ultimately won them the game. That's not what they did. And Kansas City's defense got, you know, quite a bit of pressure in there, and they were able to, you know, burst through. Nick Bolton and Leo Chenal had a great play on there. And remember, Paul, it wasn't an ideal defensive drive for Kansas City. I mean, the Falcons pushed the ball down the field.
Good point.
There were a couple of defensive penalties, including a pass interference call. There was a lot of things going on where I'm just thinking, yeah, this, and honestly, I posted this on social media in the moment. At one point I thought, you know what? Just let the Falcons score. Like, let the Falcons score.
Get the ball back.
Save your timeouts. Get the ball back. Because at that point, all you would need at minimum would be a field goal to tie the game and go to overtime.
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, like, just let them score and get the ball back. Now, ultimately, they were able to get the stop and win the game, but it was pretty tense down the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a weird way to look at it. You know, it kind of makes sense, you know, but it's one of those things where, let them score. That just goes against everything that you think of. But I get the point because, you know, strategically – that might make a lot of sense, and really it could have made a lot of sense. Put the ball in the hand of Patrick Mahomes, good things may happen. In fact, there's a good chance that good things will happen. So I get that point, and it's fascinating. But I also go back to coaching, too, because you're kind of right. You know something? Even if every gap is filled in a 4th and 1, if every gap is filled, you know what the mindset should be of an offense? We can get movement. Our bigs are better than their bigs. We're going to come off the ball. We're going to get underneath you. We're going to root you out, and we're going to get enough push that we can pick up 1 yard.
Right.
That is a mindset that great football teams have. you know, because
and they knew. I mean, I think everybody in that entire arena and anybody watching on TV knew that there was no possible way that they were going to do any kind of sneak with Kirk Cousins with, you know, the injuries that he sustained and all of that. Like, they're not going to sneak it with him. They're not going to do any kind of tush push. And so at that point, it became a little bit predictable, but I'm still thinking like, man, you don't think you could get half a yard by running it up the gut or even checking out of a, you know, a play to, you know, off tackle or whatever. Ultimately, it didn't work out for the Falcons. And it's wild to me. And we're going to have a lot more about the Chiefs as the show goes on, especially in hour number two. But it just is wild to me, Paul, thinking about the fact that the Chiefs are one of five teams remaining in the NFL that have a record of 3-0.
Right.
And in each one of those games, it basically looked like at one point or another, they had a really, really big chance or strong chance of losing each one of those games in the fourth quarter.
Right.
You know, whether it was the Ravens, you know, and Isaiah Likely, or the Bengals were pushing down the field and it took an interference call to turn that around for Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, the Falcons are pushing down the field under the 2-minute warning. Mm-hmm. In every one of those games, I mean, let's just be real about it. They could just as easily be 0-3 right now, but yet they're 3-0. So the question that I want to pose to you, and this is something that I want you to think about.
Okay.
I don't want you to answer it right now.
All right.
We'll talk about it more in hour number two.
Okay, good. Okay.
Does at the end of the day, does it matter how good they're playing, or does it ultimately just matter that they're 3-0? Because I would imagine if you go into that locker room right now and you talk to any one of those players, Not a single one of them would say that to their standards, they feel like they've played a good, complete football game through 3 weeks.
Right. You want that answer
now? But they're 3-0. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, if you want to tease it, and then we can talk about it more, sure.
Okay, here's the answer. Of course, everything is about winning. There are no moral victories. They're 3-0. That's what you celebrate. This is the NFL, Tommy. By the way, do the Falcons pay their players?
Yeah, everybody pays their players.
Everybody pays their players, right?
Yes.
So everybody's pretty darn good, aren't they? Everybody's getting paid. Everybody's making a lot of money. Everybody's good. You're not good, you're not in this league. So the most important thing in the world is the win. It's not moral victories. It's not the fact that you played them close. It's not the fact that I don't care if the winning touchdown is scored with 1 second left. The important thing is the W. The win, which is why I'm heartbroken from our game on Friday night on to Saturday. I'm heartbroken, but I'll get over it. But the point is winning. Winning's everything. Winning's everything from high school to the pros. It's winning is everything. The Chiefs are 3-0. And amazingly speaking, you know, not that many teams who have won a Super Bowl the very next year, 3-0. I think there's, a handful, maybe five, six teams in the history of the Super Bowl. Those teams have come back, champions have come back to go 3-0. It's just a handful. I'm shocked when I saw that stat. I was shocked to see that stat. But the point is that winning, Tommy, is everything. And by the way, I'm winning in Friday Football Picks.
Well, you are, and I will say that while I agree to an extent that 3-0, I mean, the win is the win, and that's the most important thing.
Yes!
The bottom line is that they're going to have to, at some point, it might not be right away, but at some point, they're going to have to play a better, complete game if they want the victory. And so that ought to be, at least in the back of their minds as they move forward, it has not worked out exactly the way that we've wanted it to. We've been able to be fortunate enough to get victories and done just enough to get the wins. They've got to get that turned around. We're going to talk more about the Chiefs.
All right,
in hour number two.
We've
got to take our first break of the show because on the other side, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, is going to join us.
All right.
And so we want to get to him and talk about Kansas State and what in the world happened in Provo, Utah Saturday night against BYU. So we will talk to Wyatt Thompson coming up on the other side of the break. More on the Chiefs. We'll talk about, is everything okay with Patrick Mahomes, and where has Travis Kelce been, and why can't the Chiefs score in the red zone? All of that coming up in hour number two. But again, on the other side, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, will join us. So stick around. We are just getting underway on a Monday. It's Sports Daily with Tommy Caster and Paul Savage coming right back.
thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on this Monday. Tommy Caster, Paul Savage in for Jacob Albrock, Max Power in for Jad Chambers producing the program today. We're joined by the voice of the Wildcats now, Wyatt Thompson, here on Sports Daily as we are every Monday on the program. Wyatt, first off, I tweeted it, I think, during the game on Saturday night that, you know, it just seems like weird things sometimes happen in Provo after dark, and it definitely seems like that was the case on Saturday night for the Wildcats.
That's well said. I don't know that I've ever seen a game in all of the years that I've done this change so rapidly in what seemed to be seconds. You know, you can go and say and be right that, hey, you got to score touchdowns there when K-State kicked the two field goals, and that's absolutely true. I think a couple of penalties really kind of kept BYU in it. And then when the fumble happens and they score, it's 10-6, and you're thinking, okay, this isn't great by any stretch of the imagination, but you can probably survive it. How will K-State look at that scenario? Will they be aggressive in the rest of the half and try to go score? Will they kind of just, okay, let's get to halftime. We're right where we need to be, down 10-6. And the next thing you know, you have an odd play and a pick and then a touchdown pass. And in a blink of an eye, it's 17-6, and they never really recovered. It kind of got worse as they went into the third quarter. And as Coach Kleiman told us after the game, hey, second half, well, really from the last 2 minutes of the first half through the rest of the game, they did nothing well. Offense, defense, special teams, absolutely nothing. Crazy, crazy wild thing.
Yeah, it was wild, Wyatt, that, you know, it was the first time in almost 5 years that the Wildcats did not score a touchdown in a game. And it certainly seemed like things just snowballed out of control. I think everybody thought that, you know, BYU would be competitive at home in that environment, and the fact that they were going into that game 3-0. I don't think a lot of people had paid close attention to BYU nationally at that point. I thought it would be competitive. I don't think anybody had the thought in their mind that it would end up the way that it did.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that they're better than they were a year ago. And sometimes that happens and you don't really see it. Let me explain what I mean by that. If you go back to the end of last year, they lost their last five. Jake Retzlaff, their quarterback, was the starter in four of those games. So you're going into this season with the perception that, same old Jake Retzlaff. But that's really not true. I'm not going to try to sit here and convince everybody that the guy's an All-American, but he's a lot better football player than I think most people understand. And he isn't just a game manager. He really creates some issues with the quarterback run. He can roll out and throw the football. They have just enough around him, I think, and they're just better. Then you throw into the mix there, too. I'm just being honest. Their defense is darn good. They're big. They're strong. They're physical. We talked about this last week that K-State was probably going to have some challenges, you know, attacking them. Now, with that said, K-State ran the ball enough and probably well enough to win the game. But, you know, The pass game wasn't good enough. The mistakes were clearly a big thing. And you look up and it's 38-9 and you shake your head and go, wow, this is nuts.
Well, you know, Wyatt, by the way, it's good to talk to you again. I always enjoy talking to you, Wyatt. It's always a lot of fun. But here's the observation. I'm just going to make a general observation, and you probably kind of touched on it in your own way already. But, you know, you look at the totals in this particular game, you know, K-State had twice the offense. Had twice the offensive yards of BYU and lost by the margin that they lost of. You know, the average person would look at the box score and say, well, if you didn't know what the score was, you'd look at the total yardage and you'd go, well, yeah. K-State probably won by two touchdowns would be my guess. It would be my guess if I didn't know better. Talk a little about how a team can be so productive on the offensive side of the ball, twice the yards of another team, and lose that game. There's got to be something that I'm not seeing. There's got to be something that I don't understand because this is so unusual. And it's not the fact they lost it by one or two or maybe in the last seconds of the game. They lost it decisively score-wise.
Well, a couple of things, and I think you said quite a bit there. There are some things that stick out to me. As an example, had I said to you Saturday afternoon at any time, K-State was going to have 72 plays and BYU would have 48, we both would have been jumping around the studio, right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. 100%. We would have. That is right.
Yeah. Now, to combat the other way, if I'd have said to you BYU is going to score 21 points off turnovers,
oh,
the dancing goes away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, it does.
I mean, it's as simple as that, at least for the most part. I sit here and I look at the numbers as an example. 72 plays for K-State, they average 5.1 yards per play. Okay? That's pretty good. They ran the ball for 228 yards, gave up only 92, 3.4 yards. But when you add those 21 points off turnovers, you add the catch that Roberts made right at the end of the half, which was terrific. There's just too much to overcome there, right? And then with this, I don't know about you guys. I'm just being honest with this. I don't know that I've ever seen a punt return touchdown quite like that one.
Yeah.
That was weird. There were poor pursuit angles, bad tackling. The guy muffed it and takes it to the house for 90. It was just, it just snowballed. Simply stated.
And, you know, there were some of those, of course, the punt return and like you mentioned, the turnovers that were just inexplicable, I think, you know, when you're watching that game and so unlike what we've seen from the Wildcats through the first 3 weeks of the season, especially when you contrast that with the way that the offense performed and executed just a week prior against Arizona, where they were the ones flexing on their opponent. The other side of it happened, the contrast of that happened against BYU over the weekend. You know, I think that watching the very end of that game and seeing the body language just overall, and Avery Johnson was one of them, but just overall, the word that it kept coming back to me was just kind of shell-shocked, you know, just shell-shocked that it snowballed to that point where the Wildcats, you know, lost by nearly 30 points after being favored by a touchdown on the road. In your mind, being around this program, what's the best way that Chris Klieman and the coaching staff can get this team to just sort of like wash the stink off from Saturday and move forward? Because they've got a top 25 matchup this weekend at home against Oklahoma State. So there's no time to sort of just like live in the crap that Saturday was. You've got to move on. You got to move on really quickly.
I think you said so much there, and it's totally right from my perspective. You know, how do you handle it, right? How do you handle it? I was thinking about that driving into work this morning. Here we are, favored by 7 on the road, hard place to play, all of that. Give BYU all the credit in the world.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, K-State just wasn't good enough. They weren't consistent enough. They settled for field goals when they should have probably had touchdowns. Think about if you get one touchdown there, okay, and the difference in that game, 10-0 as opposed to 6. I mean, just the whole thought process, the dynamics of it. But now you have a late game. We landed at 4:30 in the morning. So it's going to make sense that they're going to make us play at 11 o'clock this week, right?
Sure.
Yeah, right.
So, but that, you know what the old sports cliche is? Excuses are for losers, right? You've got to get ready to go. And this Oklahoma State team, remember a year ago when we went down there and they had just gotten beat by South Alabama and they were awful and blah, 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 blah. And I kept saying all week, don't buy into that now. They're going to be ready to go. I think they're going to be ready to go after losing at home to Utah, and I think K-State will be back up and ready to fight too. So there are 100 reasons why I think this is a monster game coming up this weekend, but that's part of the reason why. These teams have been consistent winners in this league and have for quite a while, and when they're challenged, they usually respond. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting both to do that again.
Right.
We'll see.
You know, I guess we got to bring this conversation around to Avery Johnson. Some might say he's not performing to where everybody thought he would be. I think he's probably on a journey of learning how to be a college quarterback. That's kind of what I would say at this point. I could be wrong. But Where are you at with Avery Johnson? Where do you think he is in terms of his upside still? And he's not there yet on his learning curve, on the progression. Is he performing where you thought he would be at this point? What's your take on Avery Johnson, Wyatt, at this point?
Perfectly good and fair question, right? I think all of us are asking, where is he really? And I think it would be fair to say, if you said that he's done a really pretty solid job so far, would he like a couple of throws back? Like as an example, let's go back to the throw late in the first half that Batty picked. I've looked at that thing 15 times and I still can't figure out what they were trying to do or what he saw or didn't see or what have you. We've got Coach Kleiman later today. Maybe he can explain it, or Avery when he comes in too. But I guess I'm rambling a bit to say I was expecting some ups and downs, okay? The kid is uber talented, right? He handles most things as well as you can possibly do where you're at in the process of all of it. But you can't get by the fact that he still is gaining experience. And this was the first time, right? The first time in his life at this level that he's thrown two interceptions in a game. Kind of like what we said before with the team, how are they going to respond? I think Avery is really tough-minded. And I think he's, to a degree, a perfectionist. And I think he probably was the first guy in the film room when we got back, if I'm being honest. He's going to be fine. But I do think that for all of us, you two, me, the entire fan base, the expectations were really, really high. And I get it. Off the charts talent. But you also have to have just a skosh of patience and let the guy grow into this. There's very few. Hey, Arch Manning, how many picks did he throw Saturday against Louisiana Monroe? Two.
Yeah.
It is right. He did.
Yeah. Talking to Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats here on Sports Daily, you mentioned the word expectations, Wyatt. And let's start with Kansas State expectations as a whole for the season. And I also want to talk Big 12 here in just a moment. But for the Wildcats specifically, it's the conference opener for Kansas State on the road. They now set 0-1 in the conference. Doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that they're out of anything at this point. But when you do start your conference season 0-1, it makes that margin of error go down, quite a bit. And so you're going to have to play, pretty flawless football here moving forward in a Big 12 where it just looks like it's going to be a massacre and there are going to be teams beating up on each other week after week after week. So as far as expectations are concerned for the Wildcats, I would assume that really nothing changes even after the game on Saturday. Am I correct in assuming that?
Tommy, I think you're right on it. You can't let it change. There's too much football to be played. K-State, this is astonishing to me, but it's true. In the history of the league, they've been on the road to start league play like 23 out of 29 times.
Wow.
And haven't really done all that well in some of those games. And if you think about the history of the league, okay, going back to 96, okay, they won the championship in 2003 and 2012 and in 2022, that's not all bad, right? There's a long way to go. It's easy for me to sit here and say, and I think it is true, that Utah winning in Stillwater with what they have remaining probably means that they are really going to be in the championship hunt, right? They won that game in Stillwater with their backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, what about everybody else? You could say Iowa State, right? They haven't necessarily had any issues yet. Will they? Probably. Everybody else, other than maybe BYU, but BYU's got a hard road too. They still have to play at Utah and a lot of places. So, there have been people that have said that this Big 12 championship game could match teams with two conference losses. And I don't think that's I don't think that's saying it too wildly. You've got to take care of go week to week and not get too far ahead of yourself here. We got a long way to go till late November.
Yeah. And following up on that, Wyatt, I mean, you know, obviously Oklahoma State falls at home. They were a team that, you know, I think a lot of people had expected they would be in the Big 12 championship hunt. They still could be, but they set 0-1 to start conference play. Same with Kansas State. In Lawrence, I mean, the sky is falling for the Jayhawks right now. So that was a team that people thought could contend for a Big 12 title. It's just been, it's been wild so far. And I guess that what I just keep coming back to, and I would love to get your take on this since you're close to the conference in general. This was supposed to be a year that with OU and Texas leaving the Big 12, that the crown was up for the taking in the Big 12, and it still could be, but you've got a newcomer now in Utah that looks, at least just through one conference game, poised to be the class of the conference. What does that say about Big 12 football in general when you've got, you know, the dominant powerhouses gone, but as, at least as of now, and I know it's early, but at least as of now, none of the existing conference teams have been able to raise their hand and say, you know what, we're going to go out, we're going to take it right now.
And that's perfect. I mean, you're right on it, but we still have a long way to go.
Sure.
If that's an example, let's just for a second, just throw this out. Let's say from here on out, K-State runs the table and they're 11-1. Anybody going to really remember anything about the BYU game other than how bizarre it was for, you know, 6.5, 7 minutes? Probably not. Oklahoma State, think about the consistency in which they've operated over the 20 years that Mike Gundy's been there. And as I mentioned before, the world and the sky was falling when they lost to South Alabama last year at home. And they didn't just lose, they got smoked, right? They got pinched bad. Utah has made a statement. What I would say about everybody else is, and again, we're talking about KU, K-State, Iowa State, West Virginia, all of these teams that have been in the league trying to become that next, you know, next team that's the right at the top of the league. Is there going to be anybody that is, you know, you said Oklahoma and Texas, and I get it, but Oklahoma was the more dominant of the two. I don't know if I'm being honest, I think Texas is probably better than Oklahoma right now, right? But over the last decade, you'd have to say Oklahoma's been the better team. It's hard to get to that point with such a small sample size right now. But all of us are trying to get there, right? Because it is, you're right, it is there for the taking. 100% true.
One quick question, if you don't mind, and this has to do with Utah. You brought up, Tommy brought up Utah. Tommy's right on this. I think Utah's going to be a power in this conference. Just a quick comment real quick. We're running out of time. But here's why I think Utah's going to be a factor. California football is going downhill with regards to colleges. You know, you got colleges going to play in the Big Ten. You know, who's a major college in? Where do you want to go if you're a California player and you want to play big-time football? Utah's right there. All of a sudden, California has always been open to Utah, but it's even opened up more now. It is fertile ground for a school like Utah. Is that why they may end up being as good as they're going to be? They could end up being unbelievably competitive in the recruiting wars in California. Wyatt, am I off on this?
No, I think that's legit. But I also have to be honest and say it isn't a given. I mean, if I'm being honest, Kyle Whittingham isn't going to be there over the next decade. Is he going to be there 2 more years, 3 more years, 5 more years? We don't know that. What we do know is as long as he's there, they're going to be good.
All right. Fair enough.
Don't you think?
I do.
Being outrageous saying that. The guy is really good.
Yeah.
But Chris Kleiman's really good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mike Gundy's really good. I mean, there are some really good coaches in this league. And I know the sky is falling at KU. I get it. They're 1-3. Nobody saw that coming. But you know, they've got to be thinking over there that they can get this thing turned around, right? They got TCU weekend and whatever. It's all about being consistent and being healthy. And I think with K-State, they've been a pretty consistent team. The other night, they were pretty consistent for the most part, other than about a 7-minute stretch. But they were not good from the last 2 minutes of the half through the end of the game. As we said in the beginning, they weren't good in any phase. And Tommy, you used the term shell-shocked. I think that's exactly what happened. You know, they were so solid defensively throughout most of the night, and you still get trucked. I don't know. I'm not saying it isn't a dent in the psyche of the team and from a confidence thing. And yet, to be honest, I really like the coaching. I really like the team leadership, and I expect them to bounce back. I just do.
Yeah, I mean, they can't let it snowball. They've got to shake it off. And that, I think that consistency, as you mentioned, Wyatt, will definitely come to play this weekend, because they've got probably a pretty pissed off Oklahoma State team coming to Manhattan.
Yeah, that's right.
Saturday morning, you know, and with another program that has their sights set on the Big 12 title. It's an early game, as you mentioned, 11 a.m. Wyatt at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. What do you guys have planned for the broadcast on Saturday morning?
Well, we're excited about being back home for one, but you know, we'll do the typical things. We'll visit with a couple of players. I'm not totally sure how or who that will be yet, but we'll visit with Coach Klieman, the coordinators, and have a lot of features in that 2 hours leading up to breakfast with the Cats, as they say. I'm more into that now as opposed to those 9:30 starts, especially being on the road and having that again. It was really, I'm not trying to get anybody to feel sorry for me, but guys, I work at this on Sunday, some too, anywhere between 2 and 5 or 6 hours. I went right from the airport to the office.
Oh man.
Because I wanted to get it done and then be able to rest a little bit and then watch the Chiefs game.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
You do what you have to do, right?
You do. I mean, hey, it's better than digging ditches, as Jacob would always say. So, quick story. So, we went to the Royals game on Saturday, which is a totally other, you know, story. They've not played well recently at all. Right. We go to the Royals game. They moved the time up 2 hours because of the threat of bad weather coming in later that night. So all along, I thought, well, I'm going to miss the K-State game. I'm not going to be home in time. Well, the game started at 4:00. It was done by 6:30. By the time we got back to Wichita, I had plenty of time to stay up late and watch Kansas State. So schedule-wise, I guess that worked out. But I don't blame you at all for that late night and being a little bit tired and being glad that you're back at home. So, definitely. I'm sure that being back in Manhattan for this weekend is going to be pretty nice for you guys.
Dude, you fell asleep halfway through the second quarter, Tommy. Come on, be truthful.
True. I did.
Well, I didn't have that opportunity, nor did I want it.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I will say this. It was hard to lose that game, and especially the way they did it. But speaking of going to games, Tommy, if you ever have a chance to go out and see a game in Provo, you should.
Yeah.
It is a picturesque setting. Their people are really, really first rate. And I, you know, everybody's talking about Utah right now, and I get it. But they're going to be a player, too. This league is going to be tough, always.
Yep, it's no doubt about it.
Just what it is.
For sure. We're looking forward to Saturday morning as the Wildcats take on Oklahoma State. Of course, you can hear Wyatt and all the coverage right here on KFH. And hopefully we'll have a more positive discussion next Monday here on the program. Wyatt, we appreciate it as always.
Okay, can I say one more thing in about 15 seconds?
Yep, absolutely.
I just want you guys to know that Rhonda Klieman was listening to KFH.
Good.
She was there to see her son play and was driving back to Manhattan. So she at least caught some of the KFH part of the broadcast. So thank you for being an affiliate.
For sure. We love that. There you go. Yeah. We'll talk to you next week, Wyatt.
You got it, guys.
Have a great call on Saturday. Yep, there goes Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats here on Sports Daily. And like I mentioned, you'll be able to catch all of that coverage right here on KFH. This portion of Sports Daily brought to you by our friends at Prairie Fire Coffee, always keeping us hydrated and caffeinated, especially as we come off of a long sports weekend back on a Monday. So, of course, we always appreciate their support of the program. Also appreciate Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, joining us. If you missed any of that or you want to go back and listen to any of his comments about K-State, about the BYU game, looking ahead to Oklahoma State, you can always find that podcasted and archived on the free Odyssey app. Paul, we're getting ready to wrap up hour one. I feel like this first hour has flown by. Still a lot to talk about in hour two, and we'll probably carry this conversation on after the top of the hour.
Right.
The Jayhawks, on the flip side, they go to West Virginia, to Morgantown on Saturday morning, and it was a weird game because of weather delays, and they didn't ultimately get to finish the game until late afternoon after an 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff. It was weird and wild, and the Jayhawks carried the lead for a good portion of the game, ultimately, West Virginia gets a 4-point win. What's weird, Paul, is that, of course, KU sits at 1-3 right now. In all three of their losses, the Illinois game, the UNLV game, the West Virginia game, all three of those games in the fourth quarter, the Jayhawks had a winning percentage likelihood of over 80% in all three of those games. And I think that in all three of those games, I believe at least that it's, you can point at the Jayhawks as the better team in each one of those three contests, although they lose all three games. These issues just continue, and now they're snowballing for the Jayhawks.
Well, I'll put it this way. You say the Jayhawks are better. I'm not 100% sure that was quite right. I had to tape that game and watch it. I couldn't watch it live, so I taped it and watched it, and I was able to rewind here and there, and I think they were. I think these are two pretty equal teams, which, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is I think West Virginia is underachieving at this point. But these are two decent football teams, very good football, better than average college football teams. But KU's not playing like that, are they? They're not doing the little things that they need to do to win football games. I think I still have a lot of confidence in this coaching staff, Tommy. I think that this is a good coaching staff. We know they're a good coaching staff. But somewhere along the line, they got to figure out, well, something's wrong. Something's got to be fixed. Something's got to change. You know, most of the time we say keep things consistent. But I think we're at a point now with the University of Kansas, in the way that they're playing, something's got to change. Something's got to be different. Make something different. Try not to work out everything that's going on now, because that ain't working.
The Jayhawks are 0-1 in Big 12 play.
That's right.
They're 1-3 overall. They're back at home. I guess home is Arrowhead Stadium on Saturday. It's a 2:30 kickoff taking on TCU. After the break, as we kick off hour number two, I want to dive in a little bit more on the Jayhawks, but Chiefs fans, don't worry. We'll have more on Kansas City moving to 3-0 in primetime after their win on the road last night against the Falcons. And we haven't even touched on the Royals yet, who had an abysmal weekend, an abysmal homestand. We'll get into that as well. It's all coming up for you as we get going on hour number two. So don't go anywhere. It's Sports Daily right here on KFH.
In Odyssey. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour number two of Sports Daily here on KFH. I'm Tommy Kester, Paul Savage filling in for Jacob Albrecht today. Max Powers producing the program in for Jad Chambers. Our IHOP hotline is open the rest of the way at 869-1240. IHOP is excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal now through the end of the month. So make sure to hop in there and take advantage of that. That sounds delicious on a morning like today. By the way, on your way to work and want to keep listening to Sports Daily, even after you park the car, with the Odyssey app and odyssey.com, you can just download the app or visit odyssey.com and search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. Paul, it was a whirlwind hour number one on this Reaction Monday as we discuss what happened with the Chiefs in primetime. We'll get more into that later on in the hour. We talked with Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, about the debacle in Provo on Saturday night as the Wildcats lose 38-9 against BYU. And just briefly, before our last break of hour number one, we talked about the Jayhawks. It was a rough game in Morgantown for Kansas, and they fall to 1-3 overall, 0-1 in Big 12 play. Let's talk expectations briefly, because I thought that was really fascinating from what Wyatt said in hour one about the expectations of the Wildcats still feeling like they can play for a Big 12 title. They still feel like they can get into the CFP, the 12-team playoff this year. Those expectations for Kansas State, at least, don't really change even after the bad game on the road at BYU to kick off conference play. Are the expectations different in Lawrence now after you've lost three in a row, after you have not been able to really get things figured out, even with a team that returns so many starters and so much talent? Are the expectations different now for KU?
Yes. Yes, they are. Big time. KU's not the team we thought they were going to be. They're not the team I thought they were going to be. And Tommy, you know more than more than the average guy knows about football, and I think it's probably, this has got to be the same for you. This is a team that it's either one of two things. It's either underperforming or overrated. I don't know which it is, but whichever it is, it's got to be fixed. Now, all summer long, if you remember correctly, every time we had conversations about the Big 12 and what did we expect from the Big 12 this year, Kansas was going to be mentioned in that upper echelon. They'd be one of the top three or four in the conference, that they're going to make a good run, and now they're 3-1, or 1-3. And I don't even know if we can count the one. They're really 0-3 against major college football programs and not playing even close to what our expectations are. I think this is a good football team that something's missing, Tommy. And I don't mean physically. I mean from a confidence. Maybe it's confidence. Maybe it's the ability to comprehend the overhaul plan, the thing that the coaches are trying to get across. There's something missing, Tommy, and I don't think we know. We may find out later, but there's something missing on this team. I know right now their confidence has to be shook. It is shook to the core. They, you know, when they walk to class, and here's the problem, is that, you know, you're not in the NFL. You're not living in a bubble. You don't have to face the people every day. But these players got to go to class, don't they? Every day. They've got to go to their classes and sit in those classes and walk class. And when they do, you and I both know, people are saying, What's going on? How come this is that, or how come we're doing that, or what are we doing? When are we gonna? You know they're getting that, Tommy, and I'll tell you what, that can play minds. I've been in that case. I've been in that scenario. I've seen that. I've felt it. I've lived it, and you know it's a tough thing. And right now, this is a team that's shook to their confidence core. I don't know what it will take to get them to start playing well. I really don't. But I can tell you right now, this is a team that is shook. And it has been shook hard.
There were some, I guess, positives that you can glean out of the loss. Devin Neal had another phenomenal game.
I see what you mean.
Over 100 yards rushing, had a touchdown. I don't want to say this is a good thing, but I think it is at least slightly improved. Jalen Daniels didn't turn the ball over quite at the clip we had seen in the previous two. He had one interception. It was a bad interception. I mean, he was staring the receiver down. And, you know, West Virginia, who, by the way, have one of the worst pass defenses in all of college football, jumped the route and picked him off. So that wasn't great. But it wasn't – he didn't turn the ball over quite at the clip we had seen previously, although Daniels does have 9 interceptions in 4 games this year, which is obviously not good. But it wasn't quite as bad, I guess, against West Virginia. Defensively, they didn't look nearly as, I think, crisp and I guess dominant would be the word that I would use against West Virginia. So that definitely was a big negative for sure. I'll tell you, Kansas entered halftime down by a touchdown. They come out of halftime and they put together a couple of offensive drives in the third quarter that, to me at least, Paul, looked like the best offensive drives we had seen all season long. Daniels was able to hook up with Luke Grimm, and I feel like Luke Grimm had been fairly quiet early in the season, and so that was good. And I think I thought to myself at the time, okay, things are maybe starting to pick up a little bit. Things are maybe starting to roll in the right direction. Maybe they've got the offensive play calling figured out. They were doing a good job of distributing the ball between Devin Neal running. Daniel Hyshaw was back last week or yesterday after missing last week. So I thought that was good as well. And I'm like, okay, maybe the offense has finally gotten things figured out. Then the weather delay happened. Then they come back and promptly lose the game to West Virginia. So I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. I'll tell you one thing that that you're not gonna be able to ignore, because it's all over social media and it continues even after the game against West Virginia. It continues, this call of benching Jalen Daniels, this call of moving him to the bench, bringing in Cole Ballard to see what the backup has to offer for Kansas. And that's been a topic of discussion all the way back to the Illinois game. Frankly, it's just continued. It's amplified. Are you any closer to that on your end, on thinking that the Jayhawks need to see what maybe they have in Cole Ballard and move away from Jalen Daniels?
That's a great question. I would rather defer to you, Tommy, on this particular question. What do you think? I mean, you've actually
been... That might be the very first time anybody has ever deferred to me on this program.
No, I am. I'm deferring to you on this because you've been there. You've been in a stadium. You understand.
Yeah.
You have a perception of this football team and the fans that go to games. You're sitting around them. You know what they're saying. You hear the murmurs in the stadium. You have a feel for this. I defer to you, my friend. I would rather know what you think because you hear people making comments about Jalen Daniels.
Sure, 100%.
I know you do. I want to know what you think about this more than me say what I think.
Well, you use the word murmur, and let's be honest, it's a lot more than murmur at this point. I mean, it's loud,
okay.
And it's intensified. It's not like an under your breath, like, hey, you know, maybe they need to try to do something different here. It's pretty loud and it's pretty vocal. You know, I feel like the offensive play calling, while it still wasn't great against West Virginia, I do think it was better. I do think it was better on Saturday than it had been against UNLV and Illinois. I thought they fed Devin Neal the ball more, which is ideal. I thought that they fed Daniel Hyshaw, which they, you know, obviously needed to do and continue to do. I felt like that was better. I know they made the change with Jeff Grimes going to the booth and Jim Zabrowski being down on the field. Will that continue? Time will tell. We'll hear from the coaches, I believe, today in their media availability. As far as the Jalen Daniels question, and this might be this is a topic that I know that I've worn for the last few weeks, and I know that it's not a popular opinion. I'm going to stick with it even through 4 weeks that Jalen Daniels continues, in my opinion, to give this Jayhawks team the best chance to win week in and week out. In fact, you know, I go through the entire top to bottom of this West Virginia game, Jalen Daniels didn't give up 32 points. The Kansas defense did, right? Jalen Daniels did throw a pick, right, against a really bad pass defense. He kind of had middle of the road numbers when it should have been a defense that, you know, he absolutely picked apart and other quarterbacks have picked apart. So that's not ideal. But just the dual threat of Daniels, what he's done over the course of his career, is he as good as he was 2 years ago? Absolutely not. Is he still working the kinks out from being out for over a year? Absolutely he is. But I still think he gives this team the best chance to win. And I still think that without him, if they go in a different direction, at that point, I think you kiss any kind of postseason hopes goodbye.
Yeah, I'm afraid that that might just be really accurate. Hey, we have David on the line, Tommy. David has a comment about KU basketball. David, welcome to Sports Daily.
Hi, no, it's about football.
Okay, good.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
What's up, David?
You kind of hit on two. I have 2 points. I'm kind of tired of this talk about how this defense is doing so well when they turn around and let people march right down the field after they take a lead. If I was an offensive coordinator of the other team, I'd run a quarterback draw or drop back and scramble, which they did 4 times in a UNLV game, or that slant pass over the middle, open every time. The other thing is, you just hit on Daniels. Does it look to you like it does to me, and I talked to one of my good friends, whether it be the play calling or himself, it looks to me like Daniels is playing a little bit like not to get hurt, and that ain't going to work. That's when you do get hurt.
Yeah, I think, David, that you know, to your second point about Daniels, I mean, I think that he's playing I think tentative, yeah, is a good word to an extent, but I think that he's also playing very scripted. Like when he's going through his progressions, when he's looking at his receivers, I mean, he is like staring them down. He's locking eyes to where the secondary of the other team, they know exactly what he's going to do, and they can read that like a book and pick him off. The improvisation is not there for Daniels like we've seen in years past, and especially when a play breaks down and he's got to throw on the run. It hasn't been good. So that's my take on Daniels. As far as the defense, look, I think that it was, you know, I get what you're saying, but you go back a week ago against UNLV. Had it not been for the defense, UNLV would have completely demolished Kansas because they couldn't do anything offensively. And so the Jayhawk defense was able to really slow down what UNLV wanted to do. Now, against West Virginia, it was totally different. I'm curious to know and curious to see how the Jayhawk defense will respond to that this weekend against TCU. Is it an anomaly, David, or do you think this is like a symptom of something that we're going to keep seeing from week to week?
Well, it looks to me like when they get like they came back and got the lead, then it's like a little bit too soft, and they just let them get this first down. They do something this and that, and the quarterback scramble. I mean, it's just like they can't get that play to get them stopped. And I'm with you. I think they need to turn Daniels loose and let him go. I mean, it's not working this way. But I think if they'd let him play free and let him run and throw and whatever, I just would see a lot better results.
You know, David, you and Tommy have just had a conversation basically for about 3 minutes. And the word coaches was never brought up. Neither one of you brought up the word coaches. Care to address the coaching situation with what's going on?
Well, I think maybe the coaches are calling plays to kind of keep him protected.
Yeah. No, I don't think you're wrong in that. I think that there are – what they're trying to do, and I think people forget about this, David, is that you had last season a lineman, Dominic Pooney, who is now in the NFL. He was a dominant O-lineman for the Jayhawks. He's not there anymore. You don't quite have the same offensive line that you had a season ago when Jason Bean was under center for the most part. And so now there's not the protection on Jalen Daniels this season, quite like I think what everybody expected. He's being forced to improvise. He's being forced to, you know, when the play breaks down, when he doesn't have time in the pocket to scramble. When he's running, I think he looks like vintage Jalen Daniels when he's scrambling on the run. But when he's running and he's throwing on the run, that's when you're seeing passes that are being picked off. That's when you're seeing passes that are underthrown or overthrown or off the mark entirely. And I think that's the, in my opinion, the major issue that we've ran into with this Jayhawks offense is that Daniels just is not given the time necessary. And when he has to scramble and then the play breaks down, then things are just going way off script and it's not working well for them.
Agree 100% with that.
We appreciate your call, David. Thanks so
much.
Thank
you, David. Appreciate it.
There. And you know, Paul, before we take our break and move away from the Jayhawks, we kicked off this segment talking about expectations and it continues, you know, this weekend. Back at home, I guess at Arrowhead, if you want to call that home, against TCU, a TCU team that is, you know, they're not a great team. They're not a dominant team.
No, they're not.
But it does pose another challenge for the Jayhawks. And we talked with Wyatt Thompson about how you can't let things snowball if you're the Wildcats. You absolutely have to stop the snowball effect for Kansas this weekend. I mean, this whole thing has snowballed over the last 3 weeks. And I don't exactly know. It's probably easier said than done. And again, you've been in a lot of locker rooms before. How do you get this team to keep that snowball from getting even bigger and continuing this on over the course of another week?
Run the football. Run the football. You can run the football. Devin Neal is a player that you can actually use as a workhorse. What are you going to do? And I'm talking about the actual game. How do you make yourself successful? Run the football. No interceptions. Sure, you take away some of the dynamics of a great quarterback. And I get that. And a lot of people want to see a quarterback out in space. They create a lot of things. But obviously, if we think this coaching staff is going to protect their quarterback, then so be it. I get it. I understand that. But what are you going to do? The best thing that I can think you do is go out and be dominant and run the football. And against TCU, you might be able to do that. Listen, two out of the next three games are very, very, very winnable. You've got TCU coming up. Their big win is Stanford. Stanford's not very good. And so I think that this is going to be a team that KU can beat. Then you got Arizona State, but then you got Houston. Houston stinks. Houston's horrible. You're gonna be able to get well with Houston. Win two out of the next three at least, running the football. But this is a team, Tommy, don't you think this team is capable of running the football as their main emphasis on offense? Because what happens with the pass when you can run the football, by the way?
But it softens up the pass. I mean, it softens up the defense.
It makes it easier to throw the football. Yeah. And so I'm trying to give you a practical thing. I don't want to be philosophical. It's, oh, we got to get into the players' heads. And, you know, just like I get into Max's head all the time here in the studio. But you've got to be able to show this team that they can be physical, that they can do what they need to do. I gear this thing up and I'm running the football. I'm running the football. the bulk of the time, and then I'm going to set up key passes. I'm going to put my quarterback out into space. I'm going to create that way, and I'm going to run simple routes. I'm going to run shallow crossers. I'm going to get the ball into some receivers' hands that can make plays. That's what I do, but it all comes off of running the football. Tommy, I think this team is capable of running the football for 200 yards, 250 yards per game. They're a good football team when it comes to running the football. I think you got to give that to Case. That's my logical way of creating an atmosphere that KU can get back on track. Other than that, you know, then I'm a little lost as what to do at that point.
Yeah, look, I'm a Lance Leipold believer.
I think too.
He's a really good coach. I think he's a really good motivator.
That's right.
Clearly, he's done phenomenal things with this program ahead of schedule. You know, in a short period of time, really gotten things turned around big time for the Jayhawks. This is where his salary is earned in situations like this. This is where the raises and the contract extensions and the new stadium that's being built currently in Lawrence, this is where Lance Leipold puts his money where his mouth is. It's not in times of things being great. It's in times of adversity. It's in times when things are not going well. They're not going right. How do you respond? And how do you step up as the leader of the program? Yeah, because there's been so much criticism of the new offensive coordinator, Jeff Grimes. There's been so much criticism of Jalen Daniels. On Saturday, there was so much criticism of the defense for giving up 32 to West Virginia. A lot of that, the buck stops at Lance Leipold. He is the head coach of this program. This is where he puts his money where his mouth is. This is where a line in the sand is drawn, where he says, this is completely unacceptable. This is below the standard that we have set for Kansas football. We are not going back to where we were before. We are not letting this continue. And it stops now. Now, that should have happened a couple of weeks ago, but absolutely it happens now. It needs to happen this week. Mm-hmm. It needed to happen the week before or the week before that, right, honestly. But regardless, it's where we are right now. And I think the biggest question is, how does Lance Leipold get this team ready to go for a game against TCU, right, to try to turn around the fortunes of the Jayhawks season before, you know, because let's be honest, Paul, if they lose this weekend against TCU, they're 0-2 in the conference. They're 1-4 overall. At that point, you're like just basically desperate to get to a bowl game. You're scratching and clawing your way to even being over 500 at the end of the season. So you can't let this continue to spiral. This is where Lance Leipold needs to earn the salary that he's got.
Right. And here's the thing, Tommy, if KU loses to TCU, not only are the problems arising that you have, but you've also got to think to yourself, well, you lose to TCU, that's a team that you can beat. But then you've got Arizona State. Now, they're not a world beater, and they're beatable. And Houston, you're going to beat Houston. But let me just look at the last five games that KU has. K-State, Iowa State, on the road at BYU, Colorado, at Baylor. They could lose all five of those games. Playing the way they're playing right now, Tommy, they could lose all five of those games. You've got to come out of the next three games, which is TCU, Arizona State, and Houston. You've got to come out, you know, firing on all pistons, things being changed, something being done, doing whatever it takes to get this team back to where it's capable of playing. You've got three games. You got three games to do it, because if you don't come out of this funk on the next three games, you're going to lose all five of those games. Am I off on that, or am I halfway right?
I think that if they continue to execute in the way that they have over the last 3 weeks, then I'm not sure that I'm convinced that they could win any of their remaining Big 12 games.
Okay.
I mean, keep in mind, and I mentioned this at the top of our discussion of KU, in all three of their losses in the last 3 weeks, they've been favored. The win expectancy percentage has been over 80% in the fourth quarter in all three of those games, and they've lost all three of them. I mean, the odds of that are astronomical. The odds would be that they would at least get one of them, if not two, maybe all three. They lost all three of them. So knowing that it's a team that in all three of their games, it's not like they've been demolished. I think that's what makes it even more frustrating, is that it's not like they've just been steamrolled in these games. the win expectancy percentage has the Jayhawks winning all three of those games by a wide margin late in each game. And the fact that they haven't been able to execute it and get the job done, that ultimately falls back again on the coaching. Yeah, and so they've got to get that figured out. They have to get that tide stemmed by this weekend, because otherwise, you know, things, I mean, they've already fallen apart pretty quickly. The sky is falling, as I mentioned last hour. It's going to continue, and it's just going to intensify if this rolls on, because it's not been the start to the season, at least, that any Jayhawk fan would have anticipated. That wraps up our Jayhawks talk and our actual college football talk of the show. We'll have more on both KU and K-State as the week goes on, as both teams are back at home this weekend. It's been a minute since we talked Chiefs. We kicked off the show talking about the Chiefs in our very first segment of Sports Daily. We'll go back to them and get more reaction on the last second win in primetime against the Falcons last night. And we'll chat Kansas City Royals before the show is up. We're going to be back in just a few minutes, so hang on. It's Sports Daily on KFH. Welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Tommy Caster and Paul Savage in for Jacob Albrock. Max Power producing the program in for Jad Chambers today. Let's set up our Text to Win giveaway right now. If you want to win some free tea and coffee from HTO, all you have to do is text the keyword tea, that's T-E-A, to short code 20357. Each participant can enter once per day. Message and data rates do apply. Once again, that keyword is tea, T-E-A, to code 20357 for your chance to win some free HTO. Paul, let's get back in to our discussion that we kicked off the program with on the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the Chiefs are 3-0. They went in primetime last night against the Atlanta Falcons. They head to Los Angeles next weekend to take on the Chargers, who maybe have lost Justin Herbert for a period of time. He did leave the game for a little while, battling a couple of different injuries. And so it's unclear as far as Justin Herbert's status going into the week four matchup against the Chiefs. But I think that for Kansas City, and we left things off on this note when we moved away from the Chiefs in hour number one, and I want to get back to it. Are there issues right now with Patrick Mahomes and specifically the connection or lack thereof with Travis Kelce? Mahomes had kind of an uncharacteristic interception in the game last night. He's had a few of those so far this season. Travis Kelce has not really been involved in the pass game much at all. Are you concerned from what you've seen in three games by the way that Patrick Mahomes has played and then just not really being able to get Travis Kelce involved?
Well, I mean, opponents are now figuring out ways to try to take him out of the games, but which means that if you're going to bracket him or you're going to do something with a double or you're going to bring the safety over the top to wherever he is on the field or whatever you're going to do, you know for a fact that somebody else is going to be open. So that's kind of the trade-off you make if you're going to do things to try to keep Kelce from getting the ball, which, you know, anytime you're going to – if you single cover him in a man-to-man, he's going to get open. We all see that. We all know he can do it, and other teams know it too. So there's some things you've got to do, which is probably at this point, I not knowing what's going on in the locker room or what's being said or how game plans are being set, I think that might be more the case than anything else. I think there's a desire to go to Kelce, but, you know, sometimes teams can make that where it becomes very, very tough, which means other guys are open. So with that being said, I don't think there's anything to the fact that Kelce isn't as involved as he normally is. But, you know, we'll see. But at some point he'll start getting open a little more, I believe. And we will see him, you know, do more. I mean, he had four catches for 30 yards. You know, the longest was a 17 yarder. I mean, that's fairly involved. I mean, for most teams, a tight end gets that, they'll be happy. but not the Kansas City Chiefs and not with Kelce. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, Rice had 12 receptions. Part of that is the fact that you've got to do whatever you've got to do to cover Travis Kelce.
Yeah, and I do think that, obviously, Rashee Rice has been the major beneficiary of a lack of Travis Kelce being involved in the pass game. Rice looked incredible. And so if you want to find, you know, another positive to take away, and I was kind of, and even this morning, looking back on not just the game last night, but all three of the games for the Chiefs, there's a part of me that I thought, man, has there been a team that's 3-0 that has looked as, I guess, mediocre, at least offensively, as the Chiefs have? But a win is a win overall, and they're 3-0. But if you do want to find, and I'm glad that you pointed out the 12 catches that Rashee Rice had, he definitely has been that silver lining. He has looked like a true wide receiver one that Kansas City has been lacking for a long time. I mean, really ever since Tyreek Hill left the team. So getting him, you know, continuing to be involved, Xavier Worthy can be, you know, a nice change of pace guy with his speed. And then, by the way, Juju Smith-Schuster kind of made himself known as well last night also. I go away from the game last night, even though I felt like the offense sputtered at times, I came away from that game feeling more encouraged about the wide receivers than I've been all season long, and really especially since we found out that Hollywood Brown was going to be out for a majority of the season.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, let's also go ahead. B-Ride was also three catches for 15 yards. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot. That's not a big deal. But you know what it does, Tommy? It makes the other team have to prepare for it. They've got to figure out, you know, because that could hurt you. So you've got to make sure that, you know, three catches, 15 yards. I've got to make sure we have that covered. And, you know, you distract on other things that you got to take care of, because, you know, that can turn into, you know, a 3 yard down the field pass can turn into 30 yards. That's sort of the nature of what you're trying to do with a back out of the backfield. But I like that as well. Spreading the ball around. I mean, Rice is getting a lot of catches. But then everybody else, you got a lot of guys getting anywhere from 2 to 4 catches and spreading it around. But, you know, Kelce is still that man. You're still going to go to him. There are going to be teams that you can take advantage of. This weekend was not one of them because they did a good job of covering. The only reason Kelce doesn't get the ball is because he's getting covered. So that's
– Yeah, and I do think, and this actually brings up a good point, I thought overall – you mentioned Samaje Perine catching the ball out of the backfield. That's an additional threat from him. That's what they brought him in to do.
That's good. Yes.
Really, initially was to be kind of that dual threat running back.
Correct.
I thought Carson Steele played pretty solid. Now, I think one of the biggest concerns that I have moving forward, at least offensively, and this is something that Austin on our video stream brings up, is the struggles in the red zone that the Chiefs have had, and they had it last night against the Falcons. Austin says that he thinks that the Chiefs offense was okay last night, but why can't they score first and goal from inside the 5 and have to kick a field goal? You know, they did struggle. They struggled in the red zone. Not only that, they struggled in short yardage situations with both Carson Steele, Samaje Perine. Of course, we know they're not going to sneak the ball with Patrick Mahomes. That's not going to happen.
No.
So, I do think that is a concern moving forward, that we saw Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy and even Juju have success when the ball was in between the 20s. But once you got into the red zone, things got a lot more difficult and complicated for Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. They did. And the ability to run the football, how important does that become once you get into the red zone? Well, you've got to run the football.
Well, it's huge. I mean,
it's huge. And by the way, you got to run a football because we don't want to see Patrick Mahomes. As much as I love to see him out in space creating, I don't want him to run the football. No offense to Patrick. I love you. You're a great quarterback, but you're not Jackson with the Ravens. That's not who you are. You're not going to be that guy. I don't want you out running. I don't want you running at all. If he didn't take off and run the ball at all, I will never be disappointed the rest of his career. So with that being said, you know, you've got to be able to run the football. And Steele, by the way, I think gave you that ability to do that a little bit. Samaje Perine did the same thing between the 200 yards rushing. I mean, you got to look at him as one guy. You get 100 yards rushing out of the backfield with your two main guys. That's enough. I'd like more. I'd like it at about 130, 135, 140. That's what I would like better. But, you know, 100 yards rushing between the two, you know, it makes a defense the week of playing the Chiefs have to prepare for that, have to do what they got to do to stop the run. And so, and by the way, that way you keep the defense off the field, and there's nothing wrong with keeping the other guys off a defense on the field. That's a good thing. And because they can't score when they don't have the ball. So I like running the ball. I've always liked running the ball.
I think they need to be a run first team. That's what they would like to be.
A lot of people scratch their head and say, whoa, wait a second. We've got Patrick Mahomes. Why would we want to do that? Tommy, I'm going to let you take the answer that.
Well, I think that first off, that's going to put your passing game in so many more positive situations.
Bingo!
If you can run the ball effectively on early downs.
Bingo! That's exactly right.
I will say, though, my caveat to that is that I'm not convinced. And I was adequately impressed, I guess, by both Carson Steele and Samaje Perine. I'm not convinced that the Chiefs can ride solely with them moving forward while Pacheco is out. Now, I did hear on the broadcast last night that the Chiefs are optimistic, and this is something that I think Mike Tirico said on the TV broadcast last night, that they're optimistic that they'll get Clyde Edwards-Helaire back in week number 5 after the first 4 weeks that he had to sit out. How much of an impact player Edwards-Helaire will be, I don't know. I don't think that we can put a lot of expectations on that. I know they've got Kareem Hunt on the practice squad. I don't know if you can try to get him ready to roll for week 4. I thought Steele and Perine did okay. I thought they were all right. I don't think they were incredible. And I'm not sure that if you want to try to establish the run, that long-term you can just ride on the backs of those guys. Do you think that like Steele and Perine can just be your main running backs moving forward?
Well, they're not spectacular. They're not going to break the long one. The long run for both of those guys was basically less than 10 yards. I mean, that was the one. But, I mean, did they grind it out? Yeah, but, you know, to have a little bit of flash. You look at Henry with the Titans
the
Ravens. You look at him, if you watched any of that game the other night, how important is a running back that can get, 15, wild. 20, 25 yards? I mean, he had the ability to break the long one, and he broke a few of them for 10, 15, 20, 25 yards. I mean, he was spectacular.
By the way, did you catch what Jerry Jones said after the game about Derrick Henry?
No, what he said?
He said that the reason why the Cowboys ultimately didn't sign Derrick Henry in the offseason was because they couldn't afford him. That's what Jerry Jones said. They couldn't afford him. Buy that?
No, I didn't know there was anybody they can't afford. I thought they could afford everybody. Yeah. I thought they could afford anybody they want.
That's what Jerry Jones said.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand that. But okay, Jerry. I mean, I was like a lot of people who thought, is he past his prime? I mean, let's face it. You're 29 years old. You're a running back. You've been in the NFL for, 8 or 9 years now? Mm-hmm. You're going to take some bangs on the body. The body's going to – but I'll tell you what, he doesn't run like that. He doesn't run like a 29-year-old, does he? He runs like he's just, a rookie, and he was a difference in that game with the Cowboys. Cowboys had no answer for him. And by the way, can the Cowboys learn to line up correctly? I mean, I hate to be one to criticize NFL defensive coordinators, but I can tell you right now, in my little coaching circles, I would be embarrassed if I lined up the way that they lined up certain times. I'd be embarrassed because they were not fundamental. By the way, you wonder why he ran for the yards he did and banged it out the way he did, and that was partly because the Cowboys allowed it to happen because of the way they lined up. It's just that simple. And since when do you ever see – well, you see it. We talk about it. But when do you ever see NFL teams not line up properly or cover all aspects of a ground game, or cover every gap? How often does that happen? We don't see it happen very often, but it happened numerous times. And I started getting to the point where I was guessing to where they would run the football, and 9 out of 10 times, Tommy, I was right as I watched that broadcast.
Yeah, there were some interesting outcomes around the NFL yesterday. There's no doubt about that. And of course, a doubleheader tonight in Monday Night Football, which will be a lot of fun. Look, we're going to have a lot more on the NFL as the week goes on. Of course, we'll have our betting insider PJ Glasser coming in on Thursday. We'll do our Friday football picks on Friday, talking about NFL matchups. Of course, Paul continues to lead the way in our Friday football picks also, and we'll have more Chiefs coverage as the week goes on. Dan Israel from the Chiefs Radio Network is scheduled to join us tomorrow to break down everything he saw from the Sunday night football game against the Falcons. We're going to step aside for a timeout. And
by the way, who did you say won the week? Who did you say?
You won the week, Paul.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh.
You continue to have the lead
in
our Friday football picks.
Would you believe me if I said I didn't already know that?
I know you were keeping track of it every moment over the weekend. So you continue leading the way, and the rest of us are looking up at you at the top of the mountain, but it will continue this week as well.
I mean,
absolutely.
And by the way, there's a motivation for Atlanta when they go to Atlanta to play as well. You know, Atlanta's still searching. Atlanta doesn't have a lock on a wild card berth, and Atlanta has a shot. They have something to play for, just as the Royals do. But look who's playing the way they are. I'll tell you what, and even as a football coach, I wouldn't want to limp into the playoffs playing the way I am, because, you know, everybody always says, well, you want to be playing your best going into whatever playoffs, whether it's basketball or baseball or what, play your best. Be playing your best. Go into the playoffs doing your best. And right now, you can't say that for the Royals. It's almost painful, isn't it? And, you know, my guideline for the whole year, and I know I've mentioned this to you on an occasion at least, is that the Royals were always only around 3 to 4 games behind the Guardians almost all season long. They were always in the chase. They were always in contention to make a run and win the Central. But not so much now. They're 7.5 behind the Guardians. They are now 8 games above 500. Over the bulk of this season, they've been 10 games over 500, and that's kind of been a benchmark.
They've been up to 15, even 17, 18 games.
That's right.
Over 500. I saw a couple of stats.
Now it's 8.
I saw a couple of stats that were wild to me. First off, and this really focuses on the offense or lack thereof for the Royals. Up until August 30th, the Royals collectively as a team had an average around 295. After August 30th, the Royals collective team average is right around the Mendoza line. It's right around 200. August 30th, why that's the date and the cutoff line, that's the date that Vinny Pasquantino was placed on the IL. Mm-hmm. The Royals have been absolutely terrible with runners in scoring position, and that's what that stat references.
Yeah.
With runners in scoring position, that's what the team averages had been. Vinny Pasquantino, while he wasn't, you know, the best offensive player in the world, he did know how to drive in runs, and that's really where the Royals have struggled. They've not been able to drive runs in, especially those that have been in scoring position. They, you know, basically looked anemic offensively throughout the entire weekend. I was at the game on Saturday. They scored no runs. They really never threatened much to score, and the Giants put up 9 on them. And then in the finale yesterday, Blake Snell really shut the Royals down offensively, and so it's been a struggle for them. And then number two, while we know that since the last time the Royals made the playoffs almost a decade ago, the team had been really bad, really typically the best month of the year for those Royals teams that were really bad were September. They played really, actually pretty decent baseball for the most part, year in and year out in the months of September, in those years between playoff berths. This year, it's been a worse September record than any other year since the Royals last made the playoffs. Even when the Royals were losing 100-plus games in a season, they still had better Septembers than what this team right now has been able to produce. Mm-hmm. They're in a position where they're limping their way towards the end of the regular season. The playoffs are still not guaranteed for them by any means.
No means.
They've got to figure out what they need to do, especially offensively, so they can clinch a playoff spot and figure this thing out, because it would be an absolutely epic collapse if they missed the playoffs at this point.
Right. 2 points. First of all, figure it out now. Secondly, your Atlanta Braves, I do want to point this out, and only because the Royals finish with a 3-game set with the Atlanta Braves. 6 games left, last 3 with the Braves. Braves are playing for a wild card as well. Two games to make up. I'm just speaking in general terms, but it looks like, depending on what others do, let's just say they've got to make up two games. Well, listen, how much are you looking forward to the series with the Royals, knowing the Royals are coming in? I mean, you're figuring if you're Atlanta, I know you're probably figuring Atlanta sweeps. I mean, why wouldn't they?
I was hoping one of the teams would have clinched a spot so it wouldn't be so nerve-wracking for me, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Of course, the Royals get a day off today. They'll be back in action tomorrow on the road at Washington. We'll have coverage of all of those games. We're going to step aside on the other side. We'll tell you what's coming up on the network today on Sports Daily.